Guyton.
And I'm Mike Grant.
And you're listening to the GD Podcast, an informal but insightful conversation about sports, pop culture, beer, and the like. Follow us on Twitter at the GD Podcast or email us at the GD Podcast at gmail.com. Today we will talk a little bit about Penn State's thrilling OT win over Illinois. I'll take a look at the subpar slate of Week 9 NFL games. I'll vent a little bit about the Red Sox winning the World Series as a bitter Yankee fan. And then finally, we'll follow up in Mike's Beer Blast with some suggestions. And Mike will talk a little bit about his November fundraiser. Joining us today is special guest J.J. Kowal. Gentlemen, how you doing today?
Good, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Thank you for joining us. So we'll jump right into the Penn State game yesterday. I know it was a thrilling win. I know, Mike, you're a young man, but I mean, can your heart take any more of these overtime games?
I think JJ gets more affected than I do, but yeah, I think we're both dying slowly this season. It was pretty about the third quarter, I looked at my wife and I was like, I think this is just going to be a bad ending. You could feel the momentum shifting, couldn't you, JJ?
I felt that too, man. Yeah, when they took the lead, I was like, they hadn't scored in like 2 hours, you know?
Yeah.
Full time. It was like they just went up big, 14-0, and then shut down. So
yeah, I think the thing that upset me the most is they come out, they look good, they score, you know, two quick touchdowns, up 14-0, and then, you know, at that point you think, wow, this could be, you know, a 40-something-7 game, they can win like they're supposed to, and then all of a sudden, the offense just decided it didn't want to play anymore. And, you know, I was reading a lot of Twitter feeds and stuff, and everyone's slamming the defense, but the offense just disappeared too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So, I don't know, you know, that was kind of bizarre how that happened. But then quietly, Bill Belton runs for over 200 yards. And I was telling Joey earlier, JJ, that I think that was the quietest 200-yard game I've ever seen by a running back.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, he just kind of went to his business, you know. There was no huge gains, I don't think, that I remember, but it was just methodical. And yeah, I mean, it was pretty bad, though, the defense – let down, or any offense let down. Mm-hmm. They got the two touchdowns, but dude, I'll take it. It makes sense with their team, you know. They got 20 less players than everybody else, so they're gonna have, you know, they can't really put in anybody or too many other people. You know, they're running pretty thin at certain positions, so
mm-hmm.
you could tell, you know, the defense just started running out of steam, and the starters aren't good enough to really shut down people, so they're on the field for long drives.
Yeah,
you know, and by the third and fourth quarter, they're kind of gassed a little bit. So, come back and take it. I think that was good win.
Yeah, man, a good clean win, right? Great dog.
Was this game as competitive or more competitive? Because how did you guys think it was going to be this close going in?
I think JJ and I have talked about this. I feel like every game is pretty much a toss-up. But it's just, I don't think people realize how much 20 less scholarships affects a college team.
Sure.
I mean, it really hurts you. And you're just thin, and you're playing freshmen that shouldn't be playing, you know. They just came out of a high school season. It's just such a drastic difference. And even though they might know how to play the position, they're just, their bodies aren't developed and they're not there yet.
Right.
So I think it's just really difficult to do. So I honestly think every game's pretty much a toss up. I mean, even against an Illinois, and you know, that's why we lose to Central Florida. Granted, they're a good team. But we shouldn't be losing to Indiana. I mean, Penn State should never be losing to Indiana just because of the talent we get compared to the Indiana team.
Yeah, we shouldn't be playing Illinois that close. And I mean, you look at last year, you know, they killed Illinois, and part of that could have been, you know, from the Illinois coach trying to poach our players. You know, and maybe that's reduced a little bit. But I mean, we're playing at home. You know, what happened that it got, we went from blowing them out last year in Illinois to playing them close. And like I said, I think it's just look at the secondary. You know, they got Jordan Lucas and Williams kid.
Yep.
Really, they would not be playing this year if we had.
Absolutely. They wouldn't. They wouldn't be a chance to be on the field.
Right.
I
mean, we didn't lose anybody per se, but, you know, we can't recruit as much and stuff.
Yeah.
So, That's a perfect example. And we had to move Amos back. You know, he was playing safety, and he's a really good corner. We had to move him to safety kind of because of that. Now we moved him back. It's like we shouldn't have to be dealing with that. So,
right. And on top of it, I mean, it's one of the worst linebacking cores we've ever had, and that's what we're known for, and it's just because we didn't get the recruits for all the crap that we went through. Right. And, you know, granted, it'll pick up, but right. When your linebackers are mediocre at Penn State, you know something's wrong.
Yeah, that's another good point. We had to move Obeng Ajipong from safety to linebacker because we were so thin. And it's like, you know, so that's why any team on the schedule, if they're playing close but they pull out the win, I'm cool. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I think my one final comment is, you know, it didn't take a rocket scientist to pick up that we were going to run Bill Belton two times and then pass to Robinson. That pretty much was our game plan the entire freaking game.
Robinson is our entire team. I mean, all things.
It's like, okay, Belton's going to run first two downs, and then we're going to try to get it to Robinson to get the first down, and we're going to repeat. And they literally did that in the entire game, I felt like.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will give... You can tell, I think, like, Hackenberg's getting better and better every game. I think he's going to be one of the best Penn State quarterbacks to ever play. Just because of the situation that he's in, he's gets to play all 4 years. It looks like he's got all the tools. Bill O'Brien's a mastermind on the offense. But his last throw he threw to Kyle Carter for that TD, that was a man throw. Dave and I were talking about it over the weekend. That was just a... That looked like a good, solid pro quarterback throw. He whipped it in there with three people around Carter and converted when it mattered.
Right. Yeah. That's what I mean. It's like that's the good point that I pull from this win. You know, it shouldn't have been that close, but hey, when they got a bogus penalty, I think, and they came right back. They didn't get down on themselves, and they got the touchdown. So,
right. Totally agree.
That was a great thing. And my final point is. Dude, what's like the last six games going back to last year at Beaver Stadium? They've had three overtime wins. That's like, that's unheard of.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's actually fantastic.
We went like 0-5 in our first, Penn State's first five overtime games. Now we're 3-3 in the last three. So
yeah, and two of them were against very good teams, too. I mean, the Michigan and it was Wisconsin, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
last game. Those are solid teams.
Oh, yeah. Just win.
Just win, baby.
That's why I texted Dave.
And then just lastly, I saw an interesting stat that since O'Brien took over, they went 0-2 to start, but since then they haven't lost two games in a row under him. So would you guys attest that to his just coaching style and what he's done with this program or what?
Yeah, that's interesting too, yeah. I think it's yeah, a little bit of that, although they kind of played flat, so you know, I think he could have done a little better there, but it'll be interesting to see how they do, and then hopefully they don't have too many losses. But
yeah, I'd have to look at the schedules of the past 2 years to see if those, you know, if it was a hard team followed by a cupcake.
Okay, yeah, it's true too. It could be the scheduling. Well,
yeah, that might have a little influence the schedule, but you know, I do, like I said, believe in Bill O'Brien, and I think he brings a ton of passion to the team, and I think, you know, I remember when all hell was breaking loose, the sanctions were coming down, they're looking for a new head coach, and they pick him, and everyone's up in arms, what the hell, why'd you pick this guy? But someone knew he was a good guy, and he was the right man for the job, and I really do think they picked a good guy to coach the football team.
Yeah, he seems to calm him down a little bit, and he seems to just, you know, have a head coach's, like, mindset, you know. He doesn't let him get too down after a loss, and he keeps him, keeps improving every week, so that's good. That could be attributed to him.
Excellent. Good deal. So, as we look ahead to the NFL, I know you guys watch the Skins at one, I'll be watching the Rams, but... If we were just you know, fans of the league with no horses in the race, I mean, you look at the schedule today, and I just feel like there's nothing to say, ooh, I got to be home at 1 o'clock to watch that game. And I can't help but wonder if just, like, you know, if the, you know, having three primetime games a week is kind of killing Sundays once the buys kick in as well.
Yeah. I think that's part of it, but I think there's just a lot of crappy teams in the NFL this year, too.
Yeah, Yep. A lot of mediocrity, I think. That's a good point, Mike.
Yep.
Yeah, so the good teams, I'm looking at the schedule here, though, it seems like the good teams are playing like the worst teams in the league, and, you know, there's nothing really. New Orleans and the Jets, I mean, somebody's got to be good. I mean, we're coming down to the playoff games here, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the best game of the week, like I said earlier to you, Joe, is the Bears-Packers game. I mean, that's, you know, a long rivalry. They're both really fighting for their divisions, so I think that's by far the best game on the schedule this weekend.
Yeah, I agree, and of course that's, you know, on Monday night, so, yeah, so they lose that on Sunday. Then, you know, that on paper, Pittsburgh Patriots will look good, but Pittsburgh's not as good anymore, so that's kind of a not an attractive matchup anymore. And yeah,
and you know, in the beginning of the year, they were like, oh, Colts, Texans, Sunday night, that's going to be great.
Yep. But
the Texans suck.
Yep. The same thing. So yeah, you had a good game Thursday night. Sunday night on paper should have been good, and then Monday will be good. But other than that, it's just really a wash. And then, yep. And then I saw in a couple weeks, you had a good chance for a Sunday game with the Chiefs and the Broncos, and NBC's, they decided to flex that game to Sunday night. So once again, primetime takes another good game away from Sunday during the day, and you have, you know, another primetime, which I understand that, you know, Chiefs, Broncos, that's going to be a good game, but it's just a shame that we're losing quality games during an actual Sunday day.
Yeah, I'd much rather have it on a Sunday day because I can't stay up till 1 in the morning each during the weeknight.
That's a good point, too. Yeah, I mean, I would rather watch that game, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon as opposed to 8:30 and then trying to stay up. It's near impossible for us on the East Coast here.
Yeah. Well, I'm counting down to week 12 when the Niners play the Redskins Monday night and get shredded.
Oh, jeez. Is that here or is that out there, do you know?
It's here, actually.
Okay, all right. Okay, so maybe the home field will kick in and, you know, maybe they'll find a way to, you know, pull off an upset.
Yeah, we don't know. I think now, you know, that we're talking about the NFL, the Skins, this weekend is pretty much the season. You know, there's people out there saying, oh, there's such a bad division, they can afford to lose this game too and then maybe win out and still be in the thick of things. But you need to win this weekend, that bottom line.
Yeah, yeah, really. And playing the Chargers, you know, they're kind of struggling, and they got to come out here. I think you really got to pick it up and win this game too. But I don't think they're out of it by any chance. I mean, nobody's winning in the NFC East. I don't know how they're doing it. it's they just beat themselves, and then there's no big games outside the NFC East that we won, that the division's won.
Yeah, the only thing that's got me really worried, I mean, Phillip Rivers is having a hell of a year.
He is.
And our secondary just sucks, you know. So that's probably the biggest thing. I think the run defense is not great. So that, I think the big only hope is, you know, RG3 comes out running, sticks to the game plan we saw against the Bears that actually worked. But the other problem, you know, what's so crazy about this team is I feel like for the first time, like every week they come out, I have no clue what to expect. No clue what their offense is going to look like. No clue what their game plan is going to look like. I know that's partly due to RG3's leg and health, and like he might not totally be there yet, and then, you know, teams have had a year to adjust to their scheme, but it seems like the head coaches are like just not making a decision whether they want him to be a pocket passer or a runner. It's like one week he's a runner, the next week he doesn't run at all and he passes through the pocket, and it's kind of mind-blowing to see what happens each week.
Yeah, I agree. It does seem like they're kind of caught in between with him and the offense as a whole. It is like week to week, and I just don't know how successful a team can be, you know, going that way. A lot, you know, most teams, it's like the best teams usually have some kind of identity, you know?
Yeah, I agree. They're very unpredictable, and you're right. And that's why I think they got to start winning eventually, but the longer this race stays tight, the better it is for the Redskins, because the Redskins are getting healthy. You know, RG3 is getting healthier, which means their offense is getting better. And so, you know, they'll win more later in the season than everybody else, I think, out of the NFC East.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that really hinders RG3 especially, you know, and people have been talking about it, the fact that he took all last offseason just to rehab his knee. You can totally tell, especially in the Denver game. I mean, we should have won that game. He was missing wide open guy after wide open guy, and that just boils down to you didn't have an off season to really practice on his mechanics, you know? I think you know, there's a lot of people out there in the camp that, oh, RG3 is just not a good quarterback, and I think that's ludicrous. I think he's a really talented player. I just don't think he's had enough, you know, practice to be able to make those quality throws when he needs to make them.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. I thought they lost that Denver game because, yeah, the offense just couldn't sustain any drives and the defense just got gassed.
Yeah, I remember him missing out wide open Pierre Garçon, and you know, he missed Reed a couple times. Santana Moss read you wide open. He dropped the ball too. That was on him. But there was a couple other times he was wide open. And it just seems like when he's in that pocket, he's not seeing the field. And yeah, even the way he moves, instead of his, like, you can see he's still kind of a little timid and hopping around. It doesn't look natural yet.
Right, yeah, like some of it, he had a slide last week. I'm like, oh, that looked more painful than, oh, yeah. He just kind of like went down. And yeah, last year he was deadly on third down, you know, like you could not stop him on like a third and three or anything. Because he found an open receiver or he'd run for it, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Here he's kind of a little slower and he's missing guys, you know. So like I said, I think the later he goes, the more better he'll get. Because hopefully he gets together by the end of this year. He doesn't have to go to next year.
So I guess to keep with the theme of each week, JJ, what do you think they need to do to win?
I don't know. Get a new secondary before. you know, just maybe get some pressure. I haven't done that either all year. You know, make Rivers do some stupid things. Don't let him play his game because he'll carve up our secondary. So I'd say get Arakpo and Kerrigan going and get a little pressure at least.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with RG3. Just needs to play like RG3. You know, I want him to come out and show us what he did against the Saints last year, or you know, any other of the great games that he had against the Dallas game. Even though he was hurt, he was still, you know, at the end of the year there, and the Ravens game, he was obviously hurt, but he was still RG3. He had the swag, he had the confidence, he was running and throwing.
That's true.
So I wanna see that guy, and I haven't seen him yet. I've seen glimpse of him, but I wanna see that guy from beginning to end.
Yeah, I think this team, it's at least the way it's been built, is that as he goes, so goes the Redskins.
Completely agree. I mean, I think, and you look at the defense, they've actually been getting better, you know, as the season progresses. I mean, shit, they're up 21-7 against the Broncos. And,
yeah, in Denver.
You know, granted, they fell apart there at the end, but you can't put that all on the defense. When the offense goes out three and out, you know, the defense starts getting gassed, and you're going against a weapon like Peyton Manning, you can't expect the defense to hold up that long. So,
yeah,
I think they did a good job, call some turnovers, and put the Redskins in the position for the offense to win the game, and the offense didn't deliver.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought that was just really just the inability to sustain drives is what cost them that game. So, yeah, I think if I'm with you guys, I think if they can put together some decent drives, try to keep Rivers off the field as much as possible, I think they have a shot, and see if they're at home, and maybe that whole West Coast, you know, team in the 1 o'clock game on the East Coast might kick in too. So, yeah, I think it's just a matter of just their offense, just, you know, trying to, you know, sustain drives and, you know, keep the clock moving.
Yep, that's a good point, man. We got them an early game with a West Coast team on daylight savings time. If there's any time you can sneak up the team, this is it.
Yeah.
I did read, though, this is, I think, the third or fourth time they've been on the East Coast this season already.
Yeah.
So they might have been adjusted to that by now.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's still
this helps them actually.
Yeah, it's still
helps them. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it can't hurt the Redskins. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah. So that should be hopefully a good game. And just, you know, quickly on the Rams. You know, my only concern is that, I mean, they gave all they had against the Titans on Monday night last week, and they still lost. So I wonder I hope they have something still left in the tank for today against Tennessee, because I think it's a winnable game. I did my, you know, preview of the season. I thought that this was a game they were going to win, but The Titans have actually been better than I thought they were going to be.
Yep.
So we'll see how it goes. But, you know, Clemens was okay. I mean, he's a backup quarterback. He gave them what I thought he could give. I was really bummed out the last play of the game, though, Monday night, when they had just pounded the ball, got the ball to the 1 yard line with 4 seconds left, and they try a fade pass. I was like, what?
Yeah, that was bad, man. They should have won. They should have punched it in the end zone there.
Yeah, and I also thought the formation was awful too. Cause they went with an empty backfield. So I feel like with a quarterback like Clemens, you have to at least give the illusion you might run in the ball, because you know you go empty backfield. It's gonna, and the Seahawks did it. They just ran blitz right at him, and he had to rush the throw, and that was the game. I don't understand that formation at all. But yeah, today I think it's just, for the Rams to have a chance, they got to kind of play like they did, on Monday night, and just lean on the defense, maybe get a break special teams-wise, just, keep it tight and have a chance maybe for Sirlein to punch in a game-winning field goal, which it could have done Monday if he missed one that could have made it, a two-point deficit. But, I can't kill a kicker for, after he made the first three kicks, so... we'll see. I thought the season was lost to begin with, but once Braver went down, it was so whatever they can do from here on out, I'll be happy with. But this is one of the games I think they can win. But I was kind of hoping that Locker would have still been out. Jake Locker would still been out by the time they got to this game. But you can't always root for injuries to last that long.
Yeah, I mean you gotta be feeling good. They got that, kept it that close with the Seahawks, who's stepping up for them now? They're only 3-5.
Yeah,
it's pretty good considering they lost Bradford and.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, they are they're right about where I thought they'd be after 8 games. Zach Stacy was awesome on Monday night. I was texting with Mike, and he was saying that the defense looked good, but the QB was kind of rough. And I said, I wish they had just put Stacy in their center and just run the Wildcat the whole game. That's what I would have liked to have seen him do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But yeah,
that's not a bad idea.
But he stepped up really well for them, and like I said, the defense, was awesome. Quinn and Long just, got to Wilson and seemed like at will. So if they can use that speed rush again, I think they have a decent shot to keep the game close. That's the key. It's just, the defense stepping up like that again and, trying to keep the game within a score so they have a shot like they did last week just to have a chance on the final drive and not... Basically, it comes down to if they can keep the game out of Clemens' hands and not have to have him win it, I think they have a shot.
So you'd rather have the defense on the field at the end?
Yeah, I would like that a lot. Yeah, if they could be in a position where, it's Tennessee, if they have to try to push the ball in the field, I'd feel much better than I did last week when... they needed a game-winning drive from their backup quarterback. So we'll see. But, I couldn't have asked for anything more besides a win the way they played against Seattle. And it'd be a fun game today just with, Fisher in, kind of like a, not a homecoming because it's in St. Louis, but seeing him against his old team and basically seeing if they can replicate what they did, 6 days ago. So, yeah, it's a short week, too, so I'll have to see how that goes. But so I'll be tuned in win or loss. So that's the important thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So so we'll see. But yeah, like I said, it's definitely a odd Sunday as far as the 6 byes, and it's not many good games. So if you guys will speaking of St. Louis, you guys will bear with me for a minute. I just had to, I'm a Yankee fan, so I was rooting hard against the. the Red Sox this past week in the World Series, and the Cardinals let me down. I got my hopes up. When they went up 2-1, I'm like, all right, they can win one more game in St. Louis and then, go back to Boston up 3-2, just got to win one. And then they fell apart. And I was just, it was so frustrating. And I had a few culprits, Adam Wainwright. It's like, really, man, you're supposed to be the staff ace and you lost both games he started. I gave him a pass for the Boston game. So I was in Boston, they have the DH, but there's no reason they couldn't have beaten Boston when they were in St. Louis. Boston's lineup was shorter because they don't have the DH in there. And he just, he pitched okay. But I feel like as a staff ace, you got to win at least one of your two starts in the World Series.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that. And then game 4, I think I saw the highlight with the guy, the pinch runner for the Cardinals, Colton Wong, gets picked off to end the game. It's like, come on, man. they were down a run. They had, Carlos Beltran at the plate. He could have, maybe tied the game with, you know, the two-run homer. We got to give the guy a chance to hit. You can't get picked off, you know, when you're down two runs, because, I mean, you're not going to steal the base anyway.
That was bad.
Yeah, that was really bad. And then also, what really was the killer was that the Red Sox, their batting average as a team was .211, and they still lost. So that basically meant this, the Cardinals pitchers did pretty good, but their hitters didn't do anything. Because if you hold a team to a .200 batting average, you should be able to win the series. And then,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then just lastly, I just don't know why the Cardinals waited until Game 6 to start pitching around David Ortiz. That really ticked me off. It's like you wait till the final game to start, you know, walking him intentionally when games 4 and 5, he was 6 for 7 his batting average was in those two games, and I'm like, come on, man.
Right, just, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so I thought they had a chance to, you know, win the series, and they just kind of just made a lot of head scratching moves. So I realized that, you know, if you want something done, you got to do it yourself. So next year, the Yankees got to make the playoffs and just take the Red Sox out themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. You never get that far, right?
Yeah. So that's my couple minute vent about the Cardinals letting me down. So thank you for obliging me there.
That's all right.
And we'll close it out. We got, you know, I don't know if you had some, you know, beers to bring up, but also I thought this would be a good chance. And you guys are, at the November raising money with, for prostate cancer research, which is a great cause. And I was talking to my girlfriend yesterday. I said, I think this is the one time when your wife is cool with you growing facial hair for a long period of time, it seems like. You have an excuse to
and
do
that's
it.
That's why I do it every year, and I'm never going to back down. So it's my one time to get my facial hair, because I do have the gift of being able to grow some pretty thick-ass facial hair.
It's impressive, man.
And I love doing it. So, yeah, I got started with a clean shave a couple of days ago. JJ, are you in? Are you doing it?
Oh, yeah. I'm doing it. My wife's got the same reservations, but she's...
Yeah, our wives, they aren't happy each year, but it's I love doing it, so I gotta keep on doing it. And, as far as the beers, though, I went out for Halloween, and I went to, in Baltimore, they just opened a World of Beer that is, it's kind of a chainy place now. It's equivalent, there's another place called Flying Saucer in the South, and they have like 100 taps and a huge bottle list, but it was kind of pricey, and my complaint about kind of craft beer bars that people try to franchise is they get a ton of craft beer, don't get me wrong, but it's kind of like the brand name craft beer stuff. So you get a lot of Sam Adams and like New Belgium, and it's kind of all of their year-round brews that they have, and they don't get particularly a ton of rare stuff. Whereas you go to a one-off like a Mahaffey's or Max's Tap House in Baltimore, some of my favorite places to go, where they're just, you know, there's not more than one of them, but these guys are getting kegs that, you know, there's only 5 available in the world, and they're getting one of them. So you get a chance to drink some really rare stuff, and these places are cheap. I mean, you go there on happy hour, you can get 3 craft brews for $5. I mean, it's pretty impressive. So, but for Halloween, I did go to Max's Tap House, and I drank a Libertine Black Ale from BrewDog, and it was phenomenal. So if you see that on the shelf from BrewDog, I think they do sell it in D.C. I'm not sure about Maryland. And I have seen it on the shelf in Virginia, too. But BrewDog is one of the best European craft brewers out there. There's not a lot of craft breweries over in Europe. Pretty much America is the place to go for craft breweries. But they make some solid beer. So if you see that, that's definitely worth a try. Any other beers that really stood out? Like I said, I went to World of Beer, and not any of the beers that I had really stood out to me, because most of them were kind of generic. I think the only other beer that comes to mind that I had recently is The Truth by Flying Dog. It was a double IPA. It was actually pretty tasty. I usually am not a huge fan of their beer. But it was definitely a good tasty brew to have. And as far as beers coming out in the future, we're getting away from the pumpkin season. I mean, you're still probably be able to find them for the next couple weeks, but we're getting into the big bourbon stouts and heavy stouts. So Founders has a beer called Breakfast Stout. It's like one of the quintessential stouts to drink out there. So if you see that on the shelves, it usually comes in a 4-pack. It's kind of pricey, but it's definitely worth getting some and drinking. That's kind of like a gateway heavy stout. So they make some of the best dark beers in the country.
What was that one, Mike?
Founders Breakfast Stout. They're from Michigan, and they make absolutely delicious beer.
Nice.
And then tonight I'm going to Of Love and Regret. It's Brian Strumke is the name of the brewery. He and this guy, McKellar is the name of his company, kind of began this whole gypsy brewing movement. And they call it gypsy brewing because they don't actually have a home brewery. They don't have the facilities, and they go to major breweries around the world and use their facilities to brew their beer and their distribution networks to pump out their brand. So, but he does have a brick and mortar bar about 4 blocks away called Of Love and Regret. So I'm going to go there tonight, and I'm definitely going to have a handful of delicious beers. So I'll let everybody know what I drank next time.
Very nice. Those sound good. I was going to say, do you guys have a site link up for the your Movember site yet? I'll put that on the page if you do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't remember the actual name of the page. Do you, JJ?
Yeah, it's. I'll forward you the link, and then you can get it up on there. It's Bros with Moes or something like that.
Okay.
Bros with Moes. All right, yeah. So, we'll send it to you. We're going to put it up on the page. Definitely donate money. We've done it for 3 years now. Is this the fourth year, JJ?
Might be
the fourth year, and we've raised over $1,000, so it's definitely for a good cause. And we get to grow mustaches when our wives usually hate us with mustaches. So
I love how the breast cancer was last month, and it's all this buying stuff and pink shirts and pink everything. And this one's just grow facial hair. It's like any simpler.
Oh, that is a good point. That's funny. So yeah, that's a good thing you guys are doing there. So yeah, definitely please chip in and support the cause. Yeah, this has been good, guys. JJ, thanks again for joining us today.
No problem. Good talking to you guys.
Likewise. So as always, follow us on Twitter at the GD Podcast. Question, comment, email us at the GD Podcast at gmail.com. For JJ Kowal, Mike Grant, I'm Joe Dighton. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time.